For June 27th, 2009, this is the Law School Podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. On last week's show, we brought you part one of an interview with Jason McLean, a contributor to the new book, Corporate Social Responsibility, A Legal Analysis. On that show, he talked about the competitive advantage of companies that embrace the precautionary principle and discussed how securities law may provide a basis for investors to demand better disclosure of the environmental risks created by a corporation's activities. This week, we bring you part two of that interview, in which McLean discusses the impact of the Supreme Court's decision in the BCE case and explains the transition from writing a CSR book to publishing a CSR blog. Here is part two of Omar Haredi's interview with Jason McLean.
Well, Jason, you're bringing up the issue of directors' liability and directors' duties, and I guess for a lot of us listening to this, we're going to be thinking right away the BCE decision, which came out in December 2008. Now, this book came out in March 2009. Did you guys have an opportunity to cover that ground at all?
We did. And we talked about the BCE decision in a couple of different chapters in the book. In the first principle of CSR that we cover is integrated sustainable decision making, and BCE definitely applies to that, and I'll get to that in a second. And it also applies to the chapter that I wrote on accountability, because it is an accountability measure, because it's a source of legal liability. Our book was essentially done before the Supreme Court came out with the BCE decision, and of course we were waiting nervously every day for the court to render its decision, and we didn't know when it was going to. That said, our publisher, LexisNexis, was very accommodating and allowed us to basically update our book once the decision did come out. So we were aware of it. I was actually at the Supreme Court as a law clerk when BCE was decided, so I was definitely aware of it, but as everybody else was, and we were able to look at it.
Great. Well, in addition to the book, you also have a website which people can check out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you decided to start that site and what kind of content people can expect there?
Thanks. That's right. Well, after the book came out and we had a book launch at the McGill Faculty of Law, and we kind of, you know, we looked at each other and said, well, what now? You know, I mean, this book was three years in the making. It's a global book. It canvasses voluntary and legal developments in the field of CSR and various CSR principles, not only in Canada and the United States, but in Europe and also China and several other countries. But one of the challenges, which you mentioned with respect to BCE, and I want to just get back to BCE for a minute and talk about the substance of it, but was that, you know, as we were editing the book and we were supposedly, you know, we were supposed to be finalizing the footnotes and et cetera, new things kept happening and we wanted to keep updating them. And at a certain point, we were trying to tell our co-author and editor, Chip Pitts, you know, who was driving us to have, you know, a completely comprehensive picture of the world of CSR and the law, that either we make this a book or we make it a Wikipedia page, but it can't be both. Eventually, you know, the book was published. We couldn't update it anymore, and we thought, well, we'll create a blog. And so we created CSR Law, and the URL is www.csrlaw.org. And that's a blog, you know, hosted by myself and featuring me, Michael Kerr, Richard Gander, who's a professor at McGill, and Chip Pitts, who's a lecturer of law at Stanford University, former chief legal officer of Nokia, and former partner at Baker & McKenzie. So the four of us are blogging about basically the issues that come out of our book that continue to crop up in the world on a day-to-day basis. The recent settlement under the Alien Tort Claims Act in Nigeria involving Shell is just one of the recent examples. In my chapter 10 on accountability, there's a fairly long discussion of Alien Tort Claims Act litigation, which is a legal accountability driver of corporate social responsibility, and I think we're going to see a lot more Alien Tort Claims litigation in the future. But we blog about a number of different issues, environmental issues, human rights issues, particularly in China, corporate governance issues, the future of corporate governance. And the other, I guess, stimulus or emphasis for the blog was not only that we wanted to keep the book going, to comment on live issues, but that we see corporate social responsibility as having an even greater relevance in the world today given the financial crisis.
Yeah.
One of the key drivers of the financial and economic crisis was a real breakdown and a real lack of corporate social responsibility among a number of players. So we think there's, you know, there's a real resonance there, and we want to keep discussing that issue as CSR evolves more and more into a legal concept. But getting back to the BCE decision, I think that that's a really important decision in terms of the evolution of principles of CSR as reflected through director and officer's fiduciary duties, and in Canada, of course, duty of care, and corporate social responsibility. In Peoples, which is, of course, the Supreme Court's 2004 decision, you know, which has generated a lot of debate, a lot of controversy in Canada, but the compromise reached by the court in Peoples was that while directors do not have a specific duty to take into account the concerns of multiple stakeholders, not just shareholders, in fulfilling their fiduciary duty, which is owed to the corporation to act in the corporation's best interest, I think, you know, the court said that it really, if you read between the lines of what the court said in Peoples, there's really no other way that directors can fulfill that duty unless they do that, because the best interests of the corporation do not equate with the best interests of the shareholders. So because the best interests of the corporation, and this was concretized in the 2006 Companies Act in the UK, includes employees, it includes stakeholders, it even includes the environment.
Yep.
So there's really no choice in the UK about doing this, and I would argue that, in effect, there's no choice in Canada either. If directors want to make sure that they're complying with their fiduciary duty to act in the best interests of the corporation, as a practical matter, they have to consider the interests of other stakeholders. Now, in BCE, the relevant stakeholder in question were the bondholders.
Yep.
And the bondholders were in an interesting position because they didn't contract for the greater protections that they sought. Now, ultimately, the bondholders weren't successful on the facts in BCE, but I guess from their perspective, they won a Pyrrhic victory because they were right on the law.
Yeah.
And the law says that they do have to be taken into account. Their interests have to be taken into account.
So do you envision a day, perhaps, where the environment or sustainable development will also be part of a fiduciary duty of the directors?
I think it is already.
Okay.
But again, it does require a little bit of reading in between the lines.
Yeah.
Obviously, the court is right to try and negotiate very carefully the line between making a duty too narrow on the one hand and making a duty so broad on the other hand that it's a duty owed to everyone and therefore no one. That said, I think the court has made it clear in BCE, adding to what the court said in Peoples, that the fiduciary duty of directors is to act in the best interest of the corporation, and the best interests of the corporation are defined as the long-term interests of the corporation. So to make the corporation sustainable over the long term, well, we just know, as a matter of fact, that that includes taking into account the interests of employees and of other stakeholders, including the environment, including sustainability issues. So as a practical matter, in terms of trying to comply with that legal duty, I don't see how responsible directors could suddenly read either Peoples or BCE and say, well, we don't have to take into account the environment. It doesn't say we strictly have to, so we don't. Some directors might take that approach, but I would submit they would take that approach at their peril.
Okay.
The duty is much broader.
And Jason, you're raising the international context, so I'm going to have to ask, you know where I'm going with this, in terms of the American law, especially as the Revlon line of cases coming out of Delaware, and the situation there is significantly different, as I understand it, from Canada and the UK.
I agree with you. Delaware in particular is a jurisdiction which is obviously the most important corporate law jurisdition in the United States. There's no legal crystallization of a CSR duty under Delaware law. That said, I think I would argue that even Delaware law is moving more away from the shareholder primacy approach, which I think is pretty much dead,
okay,
and toward a more director primacy approach. Now, the significance of that, we're still not, you know, at the stage of corporate social responsibility in Delaware law, but to the extent that directors have greater discretion to decide what's in the best interest of the corporation. You're moving closer to a corporate social responsibility position. But you're right to point out that they're not there yet, and I think they've got considerable room to grow and to evolve. You know, that said, though, I think that an interesting comment comes out of an article written by former Vice Chancellor Vesey in the University of Pennsylvania Law Review in 2005. It's kind of a sweeping update of developments in Delaware law over the last few decades. And one of the points that he makes, which is very interesting, and I believe the Supreme Court quotes him in its decision in BC, so you can check it out there, although they might not quote him to this effect, and that is that companies that fail to live up to their own best practices do so at their peril in court. In other words, when you don't comply with your own best practices, those aren't good optics. Now, increasingly, because of other pressures, not strictly legal pressures, companies are coming out with CSR policies and CSR programs, and they're proclaiming their best practices with respect to the environment, with respect to sustainability. You know, to the extent that they're sued, to the extent that they're not complying with their own proclaimed best practices, that probably won't bode well for them in courts of law. So, all of which is a roundabout way of saying, I think in the future we're going to see more and more corporate social responsibility in the United States coming in the back door, so to speak, of the courtroom. Not in the front door in the cause of action, but in the back door in terms of, well, let's look at the facts on the ground. How did this company behave? What did this company proclaim? You know, how does this company portray itself to the world, to its customers, to its employees, to its creditors, etc.? And then how does it measure up? And I think increasingly there'll be accountability along those lines. And that'll be interesting to watch for.
It's definitely interesting, especially since Canada appears to be one of the front runners in terms of developing the CSR philosophy. And your site is going to be a place to check out the developments and see which direction the world, the legal international community, is going to go.
Well, I hope so.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much, Omar.
Jason McLean is a litigation associate with Osler, Hoskin & Harcourt in Toronto. For the Law School podcast, I'm Devin Johnston.